Hello and welcome to episode 33 of the RTE Soccer Podcast. On this week's show, I'm joined by Paul Curry and Carl Shepherd to look back on all the weekend's action, as well as Shamrock Rovers' European tie with Flora Tallinn. With the league action taking a break over the weekend, we look ahead to the second round of the Extra.ie FAI Cup fixtures for any possible upsets. And after an absence of 12 years from the League of Ireland, Paul Doolan gets back in the gaffer's chair at Athlone Town. And as the Irish League gets ready to kick off next weekend, we're joined by BBC sports broadcaster Eric White to discuss some big signings and look ahead to the opening day's action. Well, lads, we wouldn't usually start this way, but Paul, you must be happy as a camper after yesterday's London Derby win for Chelsea.
It's looking good, James. It is looking good. And I know when Thomas Tuchel came in at the end of last season, there was a big turn in performances and results, and obviously went on to win the Champions League. But I mean, there was always that gaping hole up top and that gap to probably the likes of Man City and Liverpool, where they didn't have that number nine who was going to guarantee you 20, 25 goals. And it just shows you the difference when you put somebody at the top of the pitch for you, who can be a focal point, who you can play off, who can bully defenders, who can not only hold the ball up, but can also run in behind. And they just looked like a really confident, complete outfit yesterday. So it's good signs for Chelsea. It would want to be with the money they've spent in the last two seasons, but they certainly look like they're going to be thereabouts on all fronts, because the strength and depth in the squad and the quality that Tuchel has would lead to suggest that they're going to be thereabouts in not only the Premier League, but in a number of different competitions.
Carl, the season away in Italy seems to have done Lukaku absolute wonders, really. He's really dominated himself and made himself into a quality top striker.
Yeah, I think his physique alone, the difference from when he was at Manchester United to when he was leaving Inter Milan, is frightening. He's probably lost maybe 6 kgs, if not slightly bit more. He's really trimmed down, and he's just so explosive now in comparison to what he was. I think he was saying that he was trying to put on muscle previously when he was at Man United, but now he's pacey, he can hold the ball up, he can bully defenders. And you see him for that first goal, he threw the defender to the one side and made sure he was the one getting the tap in. And his all-around play, he just comes on leaps and bounds, and he's one that he basically guarantees you probably 15 to 20 goals, if not a little bit more, in the league.
Yeah, the way he makes space, the way he bullies players. Paul, like you made an early prediction last year for the Champions League. Are we going to get any early predictions this year for the Premier League, no?
It's hard to know, isn't it? You probably need that kind of 5-10 games before you start to see the patterns develop and see how good Chelsea are going to be. I wouldn't be at all surprised. I really wouldn't. I do think Man City and Liverpool will be thereabouts with them. But I think with Tuchel at the helm, and I think with the squad that you have at the disposal, I'm going to say top two, James. I know that's probably not the most drastic of predictions, but I think they'll be in the top two. I'm still think that Man City will get Harry Kane. And I think when they do get him, I think they're just going to be very, very hard to beat.
I was sitting here watching yesterday the Southampton-Manchester United game. It definitely looks like Ollie's still missing something, doesn't it? Pogba, a couple of chances, but a 1-1 draw against Southampton, it's not really what they would have been looking forward to in the second week of the season.
No, it's not. And I'd have question marks, not only about some of the players. I have major question marks still about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. I know the Manchester United fans rave about him and he's a bit of a club legend, but I think even when you look at the lineup yesterday, why Martial was at the top end of the pitch for them, I can't understand. Like Mason Greenwood did a really good job when he was leading the line last week. Martial has been hit and miss for God knows how long. Why would you not just play Greenwood through the middle and even go with Daniel James or Jadon Sancho, who they've invested in quite heavily? I can't understand some of the decisions he makes, and I still think that in the middle of the pitch in particular, they're very weak when you compare them to the top sides. And Fred doesn't do it for me. Matic is pushing on. McTominay is an honest pro and he'll be good against the lesser teams. But I think when it comes to the big, big games, they haven't got somebody who's going to link it between the back four and get the likes of Bruno and Pogba high up the pitch. There's still gaps for me in that squad. Don't get me wrong, they have abundance of talent going forward, but there's gaps there, and I'm still not entirely convinced on Solskjaer either.
Carl, with Spurs, it's a good thing Dele Alli and the rest of them are doing the job on the pitch, because the main story off it is obviously Kane. But in the squad yesterday and getting onto the field to play 90 minutes, getting a yellow card. But it's difficult for him and the club when there's all this kind of contract negotiation going on around him.
Yeah, it is. It's a look for Harry Kane himself. It's probably one of them that he was just hoping, looking forward to the final whistle as quick as he could, that he got that day over with. Look, he's got his few minutes on the pitch now. He's got his, I suppose, let's say, poor reception off of the Wolves fans. And obviously, it was probably nice for him to hear the Spurs fans sing his name still. But it's one of them days that he was probably just saying, right, let's get this day over with. Get me, if I could get a goal, he obviously wasn't able to. But it's definitely one that he was probably looking forward to getting it out of the way with very quickly so that he can just more so concentrate on the football side of it now.
I'm going to ask you first, Paul, about this, because I'm talking Brighton Hove Albion here. I'm talking Duffy, Shane Duffy, for the season he had last year, to reinvigorate himself so much as he has. Like, people might have thought he's never going to be a Premier Division player ever again, but he's just been immense since he came back in pre-season and now into the start of the season as well. Like, how do you pick yourself up from where you were to be where that is? It seems phenomenal to me.
Yeah, it's a really good story. And I mean, he's been fairly honest about some of the personal issues that he's had off the pitch and the difficulties. I think he lost his father last year, which must have been incredibly difficult for him. And his performances then on the pitch were well below what we'd seen from Shane Duffy in previous years. And I think he's honest enough to say he was on the floor at Celtic and it really didn't look good for his career and where his next step was going to be. And very few people, I'm sure, would have predicted that he'd been playing Premier League football in a Brighton team, by the way, who were doing really well. So it's a huge testament, James, to his character as a person, first and foremost, to be able to pick himself back up. He's obviously got himself into an environment in Brighton where he feels at home. There's good people at that club. And that in itself has seemed to, I guess, rejuvenate him and has led to the improvement in performances. He's always been good in the air. He's always been a good defender. But now what you're seeing is, particularly at Brighton, they're asked to play out from the back. His distribution has really, really improved, and he seems to have stepped it up to another level to where he probably was 3 or 4 years ago. It is early days. We're only two games into the season. There's a long way to go, but with Ben White leaving, it's certainly presented an opportunity for Shane Duffy, and it's one that he has taken early on this season. And with internationals coming up, with the way Stephen Kenny wants to play, that can only be good news for us.
Yeah, I was about to say that to you, Carl. We've obviously got three big internationals coming up now. Stephen Kenny was at the game to see the performance of Shane Duffy, so he'd be encouraged by what he saw.
Yeah, he would. I suppose it's a great story. I suppose, look, at his year last year, as everyone knows, he had trouble off the pitch and I suppose trouble on the pitch, really. He looked a shell of himself, and when he went to Celtic, I thought it was going to be Shane Duffy being the standout player up there, but it wasn't to be for him. But it's great. Look, I know Shane well from my time at Everton with him when I was younger, and he's a great lad and a great character. So it was a bit, I suppose, upsetting to see him, I suppose, getting that abuse off the pitch as well last year that came with it. So it's great to see him now doing so well, and I'm sure he'll just go from strength to strength this year, and hopefully as well for Ireland.
Yeah, as we've mentioned, normal service resumed for Man City and Liverpool. City winning 5-0 at Norwich and Liverpool 2-0 at Burnley. But, Paul, I know you've never scored one of these. I'm going to ask Shep if he scored it. Ings' goal for Villa.
No, I think I tried it. I actually injured myself in training about 2 years ago trying one. But it was some goal. It was, I believe they have a new set piece coach who's taking the credit for a long throw into the box and a flick on, but it's a fantastic goal, and look, it's one that it'll definitely be up there for goal of the season.
Yeah, an early contender for goal of the season. All right, Paul, what do you think? Anything like that?
No, they're like, my hamstrings weren't flexible enough, James, that I'd be able to get my leg up that high. I'd zero power on my legs either, so I wasn't even able to spring. I wasn't something that was in my skill set. It was definitely something that you're more likely to see from Shep in his younger days at Chelsea than it was with myself.
That's great. That's your Premier League wrapped up in one there. Shep able to kick a ball, Paul Curry not. Well, lads, we can only even better move on to the League of Ireland. There's only one place we can start this week, and that's on a soft evening beside the River Finn, as St. Pat's rolled into town off the back of a positive result last week. And with Shamrock Rovers not in action, it was a chance for them to join them at the top of the table. Let's hear from Ollie Hergan first, and then Alan Matthews with Eric White.
Ollie, that's four wins on the spin now, but what a night, what a result that was.
Yeah, but we needed, you know, the way the other results went, that if we fell further behind and trying to play catch up, it's a long way back. So at least we're in with a fighting chance of surviving, to put it that way. I don't know how many points it's going to take to be safe in this division, but it certainly is going to be a hell of a lot more than it was 2 years ago or 3 years ago or whatever, when the 36 game season was played. Look, yeah, it was a good result. We've beaten a good side here tonight, and there's no point in pretending that, you know, Pats are missing Lee Desmond. We were missing numbers too, and they had a damn good side out there. Look, the first 10 minutes, it looked like, here we go again. You know, the four corners in a row, the chance at the two near side chances here at the stand side. And it looked like ominous that you know, we were going to fall behind. But I think the key to it was the second goal, Eric. You know, the penalty given, here we go again, like, you know. I mean, you were here when you saw the Derry penalty given against Ethan, the Waterford penalty, all in the Town End goal, and thinking, ah, let's, we the man, Tunde was absolutely put up in the air in the penalty in Inchicore, and wave on. You know, like, I don't know what the story is, but look, we responded well, and the second goal was crucial.
But in terms of your long stint here as Finn Harps manager, where do you rank that performance?
I still think the game that we last 2-1 to Sligo here at home, we were better. I think that was our best performance in last. You know, we could have lost that game too. I just think the goals came at crucial times and hugely important times, especially the second one. Where, yeah, the third one you can argue as well, it took the sting out of them. Now, they still hit the post there and they still had, you know, bombarded you. But when you have something to hold on to, and when they had to come out and squeeze you up the pitch, it left gaps in behind that suited us. On another day, if Pat scored first, they'd have sat back and probably hit us on the counter and might have won 2 or 3 nil.
Owen Abbey, first Premier Division hat-trick for a Finn Harps player since Johnny Speak in 1997. Sums up his achievement tonight.
Yeah, his finishing was very good tonight. He's done a fair bit of that in training, to give him credit, and a little bit on his own, which obviously paid off. But we need him to be more consistent. We need him to kick on next weekend and the weekend after and do something similar. You know, that result won't keep us up, Eric. We need a hell of a lot more.
But you are above three teams now, Longford, Dundalk and Waterford, up to seventh in the table. So it's going in the right direction again.
Yeah. But I mean, I watched Waterford last week in Inchicore, their men, and they've said it before, and I'm trying to explain this to people that keep looking at me. They have invested heavily with four or five lads out of England, including Eddie Nolan. These are serious, experienced players of 30 years of age, and they've invested to stay in the division and obviously to kick on and try and get into Europe next year. And it's not kids, like, you know, that have played whatever, you know, Eddie Nolan's played 500 league games in England. I'm trying to explain this and people don't really want to listen. Dundalk have savage quality, and, you know, I don't even want to go there, to put it that way to you. But we need to accumulate more points and see just one of them fall behind, to put it that way.
Alan Matthews, Alan, disappointing night all round. How do you reflect on it?
Yeah, that's well summed up. It is a disappointing night. We're disappointed with the way we played this evening, disappointed with the result. And ultimately, we've got to take the learnings from this and dust ourselves down and go again for next week.
What went wrong?
I suppose overall, we didn't do the fundamentals this evening. Didn't defend forced ball, didn't win enough forced headers, maybe didn't react quick enough to the second ball, which is something that we've done really, really well all season. And the players have been excellent to a man from the get-go this year. And tonight was probably a night when we were below par. Players are deeply disappointed with their own performance, notwithstanding the result. And it's probably a learning curve for a lot of guys who are playing their first season in senior football, coming to us from clubs on loan, etc., and guys making a stance, coming through the academy here. So it's a bump in the road, and we've got to learn from it. But all credit to Finn Harps. They battled well. We knew what we were going to come up against tonight. Ultimately, Harps took their chances this evening, and we're just disappointed with our overall performance.
And do you view it as a bit of a missed opportunity with Shamrock Rovers not playing? It was an opportunity to share the lead with them?
Look, we'll just look at ourselves. Rovers will look after their own business. We have to take care of our own, regardless of who's playing where or when they're playing. Or, you know, we have to look after our own. And as I said, the players have been excellent all season in everything that they've applied themselves to. And you're not going to get the right result every week. They gave everything tonight, didn't stop trying. we'll just make sure that we learn from it and we improve and try and go again and win a game next week.
Yeah, Paul, that's Alan Matthews there. He won't admit it, but that was a massive missed opportunity for Pats.
Yeah, it was. It was a big opportunity, James. And you kind of have that feel when they've had two opportunities in the last couple of weeks, both on Friday night and also against Shamrock Rovers. They've missed both those opportunities to really, I guess, keep a hold of Shamrock Rovers and chase them until the end of the season. And it has that feeling now that with that result and with two games in hand for Shamrock Rovers, that the gap is probably going to be too big. I felt going up there it was going to be difficult. It always is. There must be something in the air up in Ballybuffet when it's August,
it's
September
rain.
Time. When it's August, September, they really seem to come into form, and that's three wins in a row. And just from St. Pat's going up there, even without the likes of Benson, without the likes of Mountney, senior pros within that squad, it was going to be difficult. They had a makeshift back four. You know, Jay McKellen played left back, Birmingham centre half, Sam Bone right back. So already three of the back four playing out of position. It was going to be a difficult test, and it was probably one that if they'd gotten over and gotten through and gotten the result under their belt, irrespective of the performance, it might have given them just that little boost and that confidence to latch on to Shamrock Rovers and go with them. And it just, for me, it has that feeling now that they've missed two opportunities in the last 3 weeks, and that for me is probably just going to lead to them not being able to go with Rovers now until the end of the season.
Yeah, even if they joined them on 50 points with two games to hand, it kind of puts a little bit of pressure on Rovers to make the most of those games in hand. But now they can let one go, for instance, like, because one of them is obviously Shamrock Rovers versus Bowles. So that's like there's a lack of pressure there on Rovers now with that game in particular.
There is, and I guess, you know, we're talking about Pats and the fact that they've missed out in those two games to make a mark on Shamrock Rovers. The point is to go with that is that Shamrock Rovers have won their last five league games. They've really kicked into form in the last number of weeks when they've had Richie Tell come into the building, Joey O'Brien come back from injury, Ronan Finn come back from injury. Their squad is starting to look a hell of a lot stronger than it was a couple of weeks ago. When you marry that with the fact that St. Pat's, their squad, and that was always going to be my question mark with them, they didn't and they don't have the strength and depth that Rovers do. They were going to need to keep people fit. It's a project that Stephen O'Donnell has going on there. He's leaning on academy players and younger players. When you put the two together, it just starts to have that feel that Rovers are going to start to pull away, particularly if they can win those two games in hand. It would stretch it out to 9 points. The gap would just be too big.
Yeah, Paul, you won't remember him, right? But me and producer John here are waxing lyrical about Jonathan Speak and the fact that he's the last person to score a hat-trick. But Owalabi, it was like he may have been offside for the third goal, but he has to take it, and he's taken three goals very well.
Yeah, he has indeed. And, you know, that's enough to win it on the night. And Adam Foley has popped up with goals throughout the season as well. And there, you know, you need your strikers and you need your attacking players to contribute to score goals and to win your games. And Finn Harps have found that at different points during the season. And it's a difficult place to go, James. You know, it's a difficult place for any away side to go. They're really up against you. They can be direct at times. They can mix it up. You're going to have to defend set pieces. You get them there on a wet night. And it's also another, I guess, proposition that you have to handle. So, listen, Finn Harps for me will be okay. I think they're going to pick up enough results, and if you can get your centre forwards into a rich vein of form, that always helps. So, listen, Ollie Horgan has experience of keeping teams up as well. I can't imagine they're going to be a side that's going to be looking at going down this year.
Yeah, well, moving on, and the Louth derby took place under a cloud of sadness on Friday evening after the tragic passing of Drogheda United under 14's coach David Conroy. David was a very popular coach around Drogheda and the league. He'd be missed by all, and our thoughts are with his family and friends at this time. On the field, Dundalk fell behind to a Mark Doyle goal in the 35th minute, and Doyle doubled his tally for Drogs, and the lead in the 58th minute goal by Michael Duffy brought Dundalk back into it, but on an emotional charge, even when Tim Clancy's men secured all 3 points. Carl, Dundalk are in a real battle here, aren't they?
They are. Look, reminds me very much of my last year at Cork, where we got dragged into, I suppose, a relegation playoff before we knew anything about it. We were gone from mid-table into a relegation playoff, and I suppose when you're so used to winning every week, when you lose, it's an absolute crisis, and there's crisis meetings and confidence plummets, and you can see that they've almost done what we done at Cork that year, where I suppose gambled on signings rather than going for the tried and trusted in the League of Ireland. And it's definitely not paid off for them this year, and they really are in a battle now. And if they don't, I suppose, click out of it soon, they could very well find themselves in a relegation playoff.
Yeah, they've got two games in hand, but even that won't see them really close a gap. If they win their two games, they're still just behind Drogheda, which means they'll only be in seventh place. Like, and they need to go on a real run.
Yeah, and the worrying thing for Dundalk is, if you were to play a team in the league at the moment, it would have been that Drogheda team. They were on a terrible run of form going into the game, and if they can't beat Drogheda when they're at their lowest point of their season, you're kind of looking at it saying, who can they beat at this moment? And it's all well and good having games in hand. They need to turn them games into points, and possibly going out of Europe now may give them the focus on the league, but they have the FAI Cup coming up as well, so they're obviously going to have an eye on trying to get to, I suppose, progress and retain that cup. So if I was Vinnie Peart, I would definitely be saying, right, we need to just concentrate on the league and try and somehow get ourselves up to mid-table and then start to look at that fourth position. But it's getting further and further away.
Paul, Drogheda's bad run coming to an end. Tim Clancy would be over the moon that it did happen, like against Dundalk, to stop it. This has helped them a little bit, but they need a couple of more wins instead of losses and draws now.
Yeah, they do. And Shep made a good point there that you would have expected Dundalk to put Drogheda away, given the form that they were in. And it's most certainly a welcome relief for Tim Clancy, because when you're in a run like that, as much as winning is a habit, losing can become a habit as well. But they've produced a good performance and a good result, and it's very much needed, because when you look at the teams below them, Finn Harps are in good form, Waterford are in good form. Dundalk, you would imagine, at some point they're going to start picking up points. And for me, it's Drogheda who are the ones who might be in a bit of trouble there with regards to getting dragged into the relegation battle. But the next couple of weeks, the next couple of games are going to be superbly important for Drogheda and all those teams. But to get 3 points and to maybe build on that will be what Tim Clancy will be hoping to do in the coming fixtures.
And speaking of teams that need to build, the last game of Friday night was in the RSC. A struggling Longford were looking for only their second win of the season against an informed Waterford. Keane Kavanagh started the scoring in the 36th minute, and despite a 47-minute equaliser from Dean Williams, Waterford pushed on the second half to double their lead, with John Martin with 2, and Kavanagh also adding to a 4-1 win for the winners. Waterford, they needed that win, Carl, after what happened with Harps as well, getting the win.
They did indeed, and they've hit a great run of form over the last few weeks. They're, I suppose they've pulled themselves out of that relegation playoff spot, and they're only looking up. I suppose when you look at, when I mentioned Dundalk previously, what's frightening is the gap that Waterford had from then to Dundalk at the start of the season. Waterford, if you remember, started very, very poorly under Kevin Sheedy, and their run of form recently has, I suppose, has them looking up, seeing if they can get to the middle of the table, because at the moment their form is the best out of the pack at the bottom. And I suppose as for Longford, we all knew it would be a tough season for them, and I think at this point they're all but relegated, because to claw that back, I don't see it being achievable for them.
As you mentioned already, it's tough for Longford, it's tough for Dara. They're 16 points off Dundalk, 17 off Waterford. It's going to be a very long, long end to the season unless they get something very, very quickly.
It will be, because and the worrying thing for them is they've picked up 1 point in the last 5 games, so it's definitely not something that it seems achievable for them. As you mentioned, they've done so well, obviously, getting up, and they obviously beat Shelburne, which I was playing with at the time, in the playoff spot, and they've done so well to get promoted. But it did seem a tall ask, and now it almost seems an impossible task to catch, which is the team ahead of them, which is Dundalk.
For Waterford, for instance, we've been speaking about this a couple of times on the podcast over the last couple of weeks. It seems that Mark Burcham has eventually got the side he wants on the pitch, and having been at the St. Pat's game the week before, I thought they were quite unlucky to lose that game. But another win, and he's starting to push them up the table, Carl.
He is indeed, and you look at, he's brought in a few signings and he has them playing with confidence. I think, obviously, Keane Kavanagh and John Martin both scoring 2 each, and one missing a penalty and the other one tapping it in. So they've got goals in their team, and I suppose the big thing is they've stopped leaking so many easy goals, which was, I suppose, the problem for them early on in the season. They've really gone on a great run of form, and I suppose all credit to Mark Burcham. When he came in, it was a big gamble, and I think a lot of people were saying, here we go again with Waterford, a risky appointment, but it's really paid off. And as I mentioned, they'll be starting to look up, seeing if they can get to that mid-table.
Yeah, well, we round off the weekend's fixtures on Saturday evening with a Northwest Derby at the Showground. Sligo had been on a poor run of form, and it looked like that run would continue when Joe Thompson fired in an 11-minute rocket to give Derry the lead. But the home side got back into the tie after a good spell of pressure was paid off with Johnny Kenny bringing the side's level in the 42nd minute. But with only 2 minutes left on the clock, Ronan Boyce gave the County Stripes all 3 points, which saw them up to fourth in the table, and Sligo pick up their 7th defeat in a row. Paul, I'm going to come to you straight off with this. Is Liam Buckley now under pressure?
Ah, will you stop, James? No, he's not under pressure. No, no chance at all. Like, he's built something really, really good up there in Sligo. And I think from a fans and a board's perspective, they've seen progression within the side. I think he would have been bitterly disappointed that they went out in Europe, because that was definitely a tie that they could have won. But with regards to their league form, yes, they started brilliantly. Yes, they've fallen off in the last number of weeks, but you can see what it is he's trying to do. The squad has an identity about how they play, and it's just about maybe fine-tuning it at the end of the season to add one or two more to maybe start to look to bridge that gap a little more towards Shamrock Rovers. The form of late is really, really poor. For me, I think Greg Bulger is somebody who is absolutely pivotal to that squad, somebody who's experienced, somebody who is anchoring their midfield and who seems to get the most out of people around him. And I think when he's picked up, that knock has coincided with their loss of form, and that's somebody who is just very important to how they play, and somebody who probably helps you grind out a result and grind a point against Derry City as opposed to conceding late on. But is he under pressure of getting sacked? Absolutely no chance. You know, there is something good being built there. I think the fans will get behind Liam Buckley. And it's just it's a case now of just finding a win or finding a point from somewhere to kickstart them again.
Yeah, Carl, for Derry, going from what looked like relegation favourites, could they well be European hopefuls now?
They are, without a shadow of a doubt. They're, I suppose the job that Rory Higgins is doing is frightening. They've, at the start of the year, they were being tipped to be in the playoff for a relegation playoff, and their form at the start of the year was, I suppose, slightly concerning. But now you look at the job he's done, they're on a great run of form. He's got them all working hard for each other, and they're scoring a lot of late goals, which obviously shows that he has them extremely fit. And I suppose to go to the Showgrounds and pick up 3 points is no easy task. And I think between now and the end of the season, he'll be looking to grind as many results out as he can. And I can definitely see them probably clinching that fourth spot, because they've got the momentum, they have the confidence. As Paul mentioned earlier, winning becomes, I suppose, losing becomes a habit, and so does winning, and they're in that winning habit now. And even just slightly to touch on Sligo there, with Greg Bulger missing, I think when Greg plays, you actually have to put the stream on mute, because he talks that much that you can see, you can just hear him talking and barking through everybody else and just telling them where to go. And he's been a huge loss for them.
Yeah, huge loss for them. I think when he gets back into the squad, he may well tighten it up. And Paul, we won't hit you with any more questions like that, but we have to move away from the league action and look back at last Thursday's Shamrock Rovers game against Flora Tallinn out in Estonia. It can only be described as a very poor result, Paul, can't it?
Yeah, I think Stephen Bradley would have been pulling his hair out, James, at the performance last week, because this is most certainly a winnable tie, and this is an unbelievable opportunity for Rovers to get to the group stage. It's just kind of on reflection and thinking about it, because it was a really hectic game. That's the only way of explaining it. Like, there was very little structure to it. It was very end to end and was super, like, very, very open. There's the two sides to it, and it's Shamrock Rovers in possession and Shamrock Rovers out of possession. Out of possession, they were absolutely all over the place. There was massive gaps in the middle of the pitch. Defensively, they were all over the place, both collectively and as individuals. For the goals, you could pinpoint individual errors for a number of them. And that is something that we haven't seen from Shamrock Rovers over the last number of weeks, particularly in Europe, where they've had a really solid foundation. You then flip it over in possession. I actually thought they were okay, James. I thought they kept the ball quite well. They moved the opposition around. They created overloads, particularly in the final third, and they created a number of chances. So that is where, I guess, you focus your attention. You say, okay, well, if we can be as good as we were in possession, we'll create chances and hopefully we'll score goals. But they're definitely going to have to batten down the hatches in the second leg. Like, they cannot, for me, they can't concede. Because if they concede, it becomes too much of a task. But if they can, I guess, get back to where they were maybe 2-3 weeks ago with regards to having that solid foundation with your back five and Gary O'Neill anchoring in front, if they can get that right, I still think they're in the tie, because when they got at Flora Tallinn, there was chances there and they didn't seem as if they wanted to defend too much. But in my opinion, it has to be a clean sheet, James, if they want to have any chance of getting through.
Carl, you've played against Rovers many, many times. Have you ever seen as much space for a striker to run into in any Rovers team?
Maybe first when Stephen Bradley actually had taken over and he went with the back three and they weren't used to it. And again, as Paul said, it was actually almost like a basketball game where it was we attack, you attack, and that Shamrock Rovers back three were almost just concentrating on actually having the ball and playing. And I've never seen them so open. It was frightening. For the Shamrock Rovers team have a good defensive record, and it's because I suppose when they're in control of the ball, I suppose you find it hard to get it back and create chances. And when they do lose it, they're compact and they're a back five and they're pressing all over the place. But the gaps between the defence and the midfield were huge, and then the back three were just so open, and I suppose uncharacteristic defensive mislaps in the back three as well obviously didn't help them. So, but I do think it's a game that they can very much win at home. They've got goals in abundance in the team, and I suppose Flora, they're not unbeatable. As you've seen, that was probably Shamrock Rovers' worst performance and they still scored two against them. So I think the tie is very much still alive for them.
Yeah, so Paul, Carl, going to ask you, did they go through on Thursday evening? Paul?
No, I don't think so. I think the Estonians look quite good when they attack. I think the confidence might be a bit shaky with regards to the back three, and I think there's goals in Flora Tallinn, and I think they'll score, and I just my gut tells me it's going to be too much of a gap to bridge if Flora score, and I see that happening. So I think no, James, I think they're going to really regret this opportunity. I think the first leg is going to kill them within this tie.
Carl?
I actually think they will go through. I think when Shamrock Rovers click and get that momentum behind them, and with the crowd behind them as well, I think that they can make Tallaght a fortress. And it certainly won't be easy for Flora coming over. They're in that mindset of, do we sit back? Do we go and play? And one goal is all it takes for it to change. And I do actually see Shamrock Rovers going through.
Oh, thank God for Carl anyway, because the second leg is, of course, live on RTE2 television on Thursday night, kickoff at 7:45. Please don't listen to Paul. Tune in, watch the game. Hopefully it's an entertaining one. Now, moving on to the first division, and the big news of the week was Adrian Carberry leaving Athlone Town, and the club announcing shortly afterwards that Paul Doolan would be taking the reins. His first club job in some 12 years, and after his first win in charge, we cop open him.
I think if someone had said I'd be down here now, standing here after beating Galway United, a full-time club, 1-0 with a performance like the way the players played, that was outstanding.
The buzz, you've been a long time away from it, it must feel good to be back.
Well, I think, yeah, I'm probably not the only one. I think there's a lot of coaches, good coaches, who were probably out of game here too long. And I'm just hoping maybe I might be able to do something to strike a blow for maybe some of the other guys that are not involved.
I suppose the match itself was a horrible wet night. You didn't bring the weather with you when it was, but a great performance from your side. Have you had a lot of time so far with them?
No, we had Tuesday and Thursday, as I was saying, like two nights, but we worked on a few things, and I think a lot of the type of work that I would do is all to do with the team and the structure of the team, the shape of the team. It was outstanding, I thought. The players were, contrasting from last week to this week. And okay, I'm not talking about anybody, I'm just talking about the game. Looking at the game last week, they looked a bit loose and open, where tonight, really, really good.
Yeah, you must be pleased. As you said, only a couple of training sessions, but the reaction straight away was from there.
Yeah, I think sometimes people say you get new manager, you get a bounce reaction. But I think it was a bit more. Like I was really impressed, and I thought when I came down on Tuesday, I said to myself, there's a lot of good players there and talented players, but maybe they just lost their way a little bit. And you could see even in training that they're good, and that's probably down to the previous manager where he was training them. As I said, I'm delighted. I mean, it's not as if you're coming in with an easy game. This group is a full-time club, and we played really, really well.
I thought personally, even though from a Galway viewpoint, I thought you were dominant out there, and again, that must be pleasing, looking forward to the remainder of the season as well.
Yeah, I think it is. Hopefully, as I said, it's not, you imagine it's a bounce, but hopefully it isn't, and hopefully we can try and get to the next game, which is Cork, in 2 weeks' time, or three next weekend. So that gives us nearly 2 weeks to work with the team.
I suppose you look at the table, you look at Galway last year, they went on a bit of bounce, maybe it was a little earlier, but you look up the table, I think 5 points off the playoff positions
yeah.
as well.
Yeah, yeah, and we've to play a few teams as well. So look, I mean, it's been brilliant. It was a great performance tonight from the players. They were really excellent, but there's still a bit of work to be done.
We're going forward now as well. You know, you said, you know, you've been a long time away. If you look at the ground, trying to keep that consistently coming forward now as well, that has to be probably key, is it?
Going forward? Of course, yeah. I mean, it's like anything. When you're playing in a league, it's all about consistency, and there's no point in playing 1 week and then not there. You're looking for players, even individually, 7 out of 10s every week if possible. But I mean, the players have been great, they've trained well the couple of days that we have, and I mean, they're good guys.
I suppose if you look further for you, just look generally then on Irish football, you know, you've seen one of your former clubs, Shamrock Rovers, had a disappointing result straight away. Irish football is still in a good place.
Yeah, I think so. I think when you look at Bowes, they've been excellent in their European run. Rovers, they're probably still in it at the moment, you know, the way it is. And again, as well, you're talking about a different league there. You're talking about the Premier Division there. There's a lot of good clubs, a lot of big clubs. Clubs that have spent a lot of money, and that's what you should get when you do. I had to do it myself. I draw it going back. When you spend the money, you need to get the performance, or you need to get the results. And in fairness to a lot of the clubs, there's some really, really good clubs.
I suppose that ultimately is the aim for us all the other clubs, isn't it, to catch up to the Rovers and stuff?
Yeah, it isn't easy. Having run a full-time club a couple of times, at Drogheda particularly, I remember starting down in Drogheda, and where we came from, I'm not sure if people understood where we actually came from to where we ended up. And I come down then Tuesday and I look at the ground here. It's a marvellous setup. Just probably needs to get that little bit boost again, and hopefully we can continue, you know.
You certainly have some, you know, array of attacking players there, for instance.
Yeah, that's the first thing I probably would have said myself when I did say there's a lot of ability, but it's not always about the attacking. It's always about the defensive side, and I thought we were outstanding.
Very good performance on the side, and no doubt giving you a bit of buzz and giving an appetite for the future, the rest of the season.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. I mean, I think there's nothing as good as football. There's nothing as good as getting that feeling. You know, I wasn't totally away from football. I was giving a good friend of mine, Bobby Brown, a handout in Sword Celtic. So I wasn't just coming straight from the couch, you know. So hopefully, as I said, just delighted that to get the opportunity, and hopefully we can continue.
Well, I can certainly see by your excitement at the end of that pitch, the buzz is back.
Well, I mean, I don't know about the buzz. I was always the same. You know, I think it was a brilliant performance to be able to do that. And I think as well, too, I'm not talking about myself here. There's a lot of really good coaches around who are just this cast aside, you know. What I feel, I don't know whether it's age or what, you know, or looks maybe.
What do you feel in it going forward? Is there something bigger that needs to be done with Irish coaching levels to give these people that are out of work opportunities?
Well, I think it's very hard because it's a small industry here. But I do think there's a lot of good coaches who are not involved anywhere, you know. And it's a shame, you know. I think going forward, we're just hoping that we'll be able to maybe continue. We can only wait and see, you know. It's another 7 games to go. So, as I said, I'm here for 7 weeks at the minute, and should we see what happens then?
Yeah, well, Paul, as you heard there, I've mentioned before, this is 12 years since Doolan actually looked after a League of Ireland club. And even in his comments there, you can tell he hasn't changed a bit. It's more about defence than it is about attack. But you played under him an under-23 squad.
Yeah, I did. God, that must be going back to 2010 or so. I actually thought it was a bit of an achievement getting into the squad, James. But Shep made me know off air that there seemed to be a number of pullouts, and that's maybe how I crept into the squad. But we had probably about 5 or 6 days over in Estonia. And I mean, it was my first interactions with him. And I guess what stood out for me from the time I spent there was just the demands that he has, James, and particularly in training and the standards that he sets. There's a real tempo to absolutely everything he does, whether it's just rondos at the beginning or whether it's shape or possession. There was a tempo and an expectation of what he wanted to do within those sessions. And also you could see that as a coach and as a person and as a football man, he has a serious level of knowledge of the game. And I think he's going to be a superb appointment down in Athlone, because when you look at the squad and you look at some of the players they have, they're young players in particular who you'd look at, and maybe going back 2 or 3 years, you'd be talking about potential, and they definitely have the potential to do something, but they need a manager who's potentially going to help them along in their career and help them, I guess, get the most out of that potential. And I think he is somebody who will be able to do that down in Athlone. And like he's mentioned there, they're only 5 points off the playoffs. Would I be surprised if he was able to get a kick out of that squad and a run of momentum to push them on? I would not be surprised at all, because from my experience, albeit short, he's somebody who knows the game a lot, and through his sessions, I think that will then lead into good performances on the pitch.
Yeah, you two guys probably remember him mostly for coaching. I remember him on the pitch as well as for coaching. So that's how long I've been looking to Doolin play and to manage. But hopefully he does well. And with that 1-0 win over Galway, they closed the gap to Treaty United ahead of them as they drew 1-1 with Wexford. And it was a case of draws all round in the other games, with Shelbourne drawing 1-1 with Bray, and Cam Teedley drawing 2-2 at home to Cork City. The only win, bar that at Lomond, was UCD on Saturday evening as they travelled to Cove and came away with a 2-0 victory. Well, this Friday evening sees the start, well, the second round of the Extra.ie FEI Cup. UCD versus Longford, Waterford versus Kilmarnock. And if you ask me to tie it around, lads, and I don't know if you're all going to agree with me here, Dundalk versus St Monk, this is definitely the toilet ground around as far as I can see. What do you think?
Yeah, it definitely has banana peel written all over it. It's a very tricky one. Again, I suppose Moctis will be looking at it thinking, keep it at 0-0 as long as we can, and the nerves will definitely be kicking in for Dundalk. But again, I do think Dundalk will, I suppose, overcome them quite easily. They've so much quality, and if you're not up to, I suppose, the level of pressing, or if you're not able to sit in and get to the players quick enough, Dundalk have the players that will hurt you.
Yeah, there are obviously some big, big ties. Cork City versus St. Pat's as well. Paul, that's Friday night. That'd be a big, big game as well down Turner's Cross.
It will be, and it's one that Cork will probably look at and fancy themselves going into it, just with the fact that, like I mentioned before, with Pat's missing quite a number of players and senior players from their squad, you would imagine the Pats are going to have too much. But if Cork can stay in that tie with the crowd that will be attracted down into Turner's Cross, it's going to be a difficult one, but I think Pats will get through, James.
Northwest Derby again for Derry and Harps, Carl, big game.
Yeah, and they're both in a good reign of form, so that will be a very close game. It's a coin toss for me who will win that. As I said, Finn Harps, have known Ollie. I think he may rotate his team, as the league is the be all and end all for Ollie, and you can see why, because every year Ollie seems to be in a relegation battle and finds his way to keep him up. So I do think he may rotate his team, and that's why I possibly fancy Derry, but again, it's a coin toss for me.
Yeah, there's two other games on Saturday. You've got Maynooth University Town versus Cove Ramblers. That should be actually, that Paul, that should be a close game, shouldn't it?
I was kind of hoping you wouldn't ask me about this one.
it should be. Maynooth have done really, really well. They've worked really well over the last couple of years. And the link up with St. Pat's as well that Maynooth have had over the last number of years has seen their football move on a lot. So that'll be a tight game in Maynooth. The other one, obviously, Colester Donnacarney versus Wexford. I don't know, guys. Wexford are on a poor run of form. They haven't really done well. This could be a case of a non-league team going through on that one. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, like, you hear from people who are involved in particular in the Leinster Senior League, and they like to fancy themselves as being at the same sort of level as the First Division. So between, you know, the Maynooth Cove game and the Colester Wexford game, it'd be interesting to see how they play out, because there probably won't be a huge amount between the two sides. Your gut would always tell you that the First Division teams would go through, but they won't be easy ties, James.
Yeah, Carl, there's obviously another game on Sunday evening. That's Bohemians versus Shamrock Rovers. They were due to play each other last weekend. That was cancelled and postponed due to Rovers' action in Europe. So this is going to be a tasty tie, isn't it?
It will. For me, it's the second tastiest tie of the round, obviously, after Maynooth Cove. Kieran Calough actually coaching Maynooth. So I do think there is an upset there. They beat Malahide 3-0 in the last round. So I do think there is an upset there. But for me, obviously, Bo Shamrock Rovers, what a big game it is. And Bo's find themselves in, a fantastic run of form of having done so well in Europe. And what I suppose also keeping their league form ticking over, it's a game they'll definitely be chomping at the bit to go through in. And they're just the way that you look at their team, they're so full of energy at the moment. I think they're the perfect team for a Bowes Rovers game, that they'll be full of energy and chomping at the bit to get a go at Rovers.
Paul, what's your thoughts on this one?
I think how Sunday goes could be dependent on how Rovers get on in Europe. If they play well against Flora Tallinn, they could easily take the momentum from that tie and the performance from that tie through till Sunday. If not, you could potentially see a bit of a hangover. You could see the confidence levels drop a bit, and you might see a reshuffle of the pack, and that might give Bowes a good opportunity. I still think Shamrock Rovers have the better players between the two squads. I think they've edged it in the majority of the ties over the last 3-4 years. And I think they'll have enough to get through on Sunday. And listen, I know there'll be many of Bowes fans that disagree with me, but that's where I still think Shamrock Rovers have that edge over Bowes.
Yeah, the extra .ie FEI Cup second round gets ahead on Friday evening. Fingers crossed we see some good games over the weekend, see who comes out of it, and then fingers crossed once again the quarterfinals is not drawn either by Paul Curry or Alan Cawley. So, Carl, any chance you could do the draw so we can get some decent draws this time, seeing as the two lads have drawn Derry against Finn Harps and Drogheda away in the last two rounds?
Yeah. We're losing some big teams, all right. Possibly Dundalk as well.
Yeah, we could be losing some good, big, big teams. Thanks very much, lads. Now, moving away from the League of Ireland with the start of the Danske Bank Premiership this weekend, I'm happy to be joined by BBC broadcaster Eric White to look ahead to the opening day's fixtures, and some big signings have already happened in the off-season, Eric.
Well, they have indeed, James, and good to talk to you as always. But it's been a really exciting summer, it has to be said. Major transfers, and it's just added to the sense of anticipation ahead of the new campaign, which, as you say, kicks off this weekend. Two matches on Friday night and then four on Saturday afternoon. And if the football on the pitch can match the drama off it, well, there's plenty there to whet the appetite, I suppose. Without doubt, the most eye-catching piece of business, the Irish League transfer record has actually was broken, with Shea McCartan going to Glentoran from Ballymena for £100,000, which is an extraordinary amount of money, really, at this level, smashing the previous record in 2019, when Jamie McGonigal, now at Derry City, of course, went from Coleraine to Crusaders for £60,000, and Glenn Ferguson moved from Glenavon to Linfield for £55,000. That was back in 1998. So within the last 2 years, that transfer record has been broken, has been smashed twice, if you like. Then you have some other signings of considerable note. Chris Shields, of course, who played such a key part of all the success that Dundalk enjoyed over the best part of, what, 9-10 years. He went to the champions Linfield. And Ben Doherty has gone from Coleraine to Larne, also, we understand, for a fairly significant figure, including a player swap deal as well, with Conor McKendry going the other direction. Navid Naziri has switched from Linfield to Larne. Bobby Burns has gone back to Glentoran. And you know what, James, with still a few days to go before the start of the new campaign, you certainly wouldn't rule out further moves. The likes of Glentoran and maybe one or two other clubs, Larne and Ballymena, they've been linked in recent days, with Cliftonville's Joe Gormley, a supreme goal scorer up here in the Irish League. 247 goals he scored for them. So any of those clubs could still yet make another major signing before kick-off. And I wouldn't rule out Linfield either, who have been going into the market across the water.
Yeah, it's a bit odd that we actually hear these figures come out, especially, like, we rarely hear a figure like this in the League of Ireland. But to see a figure of 100,000 for a player, like, I know some clubs have big money there, the likes of Larne and stuff like that, but this is massive money, isn't it?
It really is. It absolutely is. And this is a player that possibly could have been signed up for free only a couple of months ago, but Ballymena tied him down on a contract for a couple of years, and therefore Glentoran had to pay the big price tag. I suppose what's at play here, really, James, is the fact that you have wealthy owners that have come in at two clubs in particular. Kenny Bruce, who is the owner of Purple Bricks, that's an online estate agency. Yeah. He's a millionaire. He's bought his family's hometown club, which is Larne. And then you've got Ali Poor, who's a British Iranian businessman at Glentoran. Now, he took control of the Glens, I think it was back in the middle of 2019. They were in considerable debt, and he made the club debt-free by early 2020. You know, there was figures anywhere between 1.5 and 2 million in the red. The club's future was actually hanging in the balance. And this is Glentoran, one of the major players in the Irish League. And these people have come in and they're prepared to put major money into their clubs, and these sorts of money around the local game now is massive, really, in comparison to a few years ago, and particularly in Larne's case as well, which is an interesting one. I mean, Kenny Bruce, he's just not investing on the pitch. He's investing off the pitch as well, because they've made a lot of improvements to Inver Park. They have a new synthetic grass pitch there over the summer. They've been working on the construction of a new 600-seat stand, which has brought the club up to UEFA licensing requirements. And they've also now got planning permission as well in for a replacement of the main stand. So he's really setting the club up to be self-sustainable long-term. Glentoran have ambitious plans as well. They're looking at the redevelopment of the Oval. This has been a long-running thing, though. But if it does materialise, it would also make for quite a spectacular arena in East Belfast as well. The main thrust of it being a new all-seater stadium, totaling a 4,000 capacity. So a lot of plans in the pipeline, and a lot of exciting developments in the future.
Yeah, there's a club not a million miles away down the M1 in the League of Ireland that would be looking for their owners to put in the type of investment that's happening at Larne at the moment. But is this a race for European positions, or are we looking at league titles? And is there a danger here, Eric, that we might see what happened in the League of Ireland a number of years ago, where big money was put in and then a crash happened?
Absolutely, James. That's the big question over all this. Where is it going to end? Because it is quite similar to the League of Ireland, because they do see this carrot dangling in front of them, and that is the European money, and clubs feel that they need to speculate to accumulate. I mean, the prize money involved in Europe far outweighs anything else domestically, when you're guaranteed the €250,000 simply for qualifying, and then that again every round you can negotiate thereafter. The Champions League obviously is a much larger pool of money, and clubs want their share of this money, and that's why teams are going after the big players. They're trying to qualify for Europe. They're trying to break that barrier where no Irish league club has managed to get into the group stages of a European competition last. Some clubs profited more from their runs in Europe this year, and we maybe are seeing a gap beginning to emerge as well, because there's four clubs now have gone full-time in the Irish league: Crusaders, Glentoran, Larne, and now this summer Linfield. And they're chasing the big prizes. They're chasing the big money. Is it creating a division in the league? Certainly the part-time teams now are going to find it very, very difficult to compete with them. And the top players know that they can get the money at these clubs, and that's inevitably where they're looking to go.
Yeah, as you're talking about their runs in Europe, you look at Larne in particular. Unfortunately, the draw didn't favour them really when they got Pacos de Ferreira. That was always going to be very difficult. But for Linfield, would they have expected Fola of Luxembourg to be an easy enough draw again, of course, coming down a champions a route to that game?
No, I think you make a good point there, James. I think Linfield will feel that they underachieved in Europe this summer. I think across the board, the European results, bit of a mixed bag for the Irish League clubs, because this is where they see the indicator as to whether the league is getting better or not. And they do want to become more competitive in Europe now. It wasn't all that long ago that managers of clubs that are qualified for Europe might have been away on holidays when their teams were in Europe, and players as well. And Glentoran had a particularly poor performance in Europe. They went out at the first hurdle, losing to TNS, and that was a real hammer blow to them given their investment that we've just talked about. Coleraine, they were outclassed to a Bosnian team. I think unfortunately they just got a tough draw there. But Linfield went out early in the Champions League. They lost both legs to Zalgiris. They did make it through a round then in the Europa Conference League. They were pretty impressive against the Bosnian side, but that match against Folesk of Luxembourg, where over the two legs, across the two legs, they looked the better team. They didn't take their chances and they went out. And certainly there would have been expectations of maybe going another round. It was only about 2 years ago that Linfield were on the verge of qualifying for the group stages, the closest that any team in the Irish League has come so far. They just needed an away goal, if my memory serves me correct, out in Carabag, which would have took them through, so they came mighty close. But without doubt, I think the best performance was by Larne, and this was their first time ever appearing in Europe as well. They won two ties, in the first round. Then they beat Aarhus from Denmark, which was a really big scalp. And they did manage to beat Pacos in the home leg. Admittedly, the tie was over at that stage. Pacos, as we know now at the moment, leading Tottenham at the halfway point of that tie. But, you know, European results, they've improved, but they're not where they want to be right now. And perhaps full-time football will help that. And they're also looking very closely at summer football as well, because they know that that has been the reason, or partly of the reason, why League of Ireland clubs have sort of made more strides in Europe as well.
Yeah, that was the carrot I was going to dangle there to you, Eric. Is the summer football / All-Ireland League, is it gaining momentum again? Is there chat between the clubs? And when I say the clubs, I'm talking mostly these clubs who have gone full-time professional, because I can't see the likes of Portadown down or the part-time clubs really looking towards a summer league or even an All-Ireland league.
Yeah, well, I suppose if you take them separately, James, I think the All-Ireland League is off the table, certainly for the foreseeable future. Yes, you can point to COVID and the impact that has had on leagues and teams right now. And I just think that league administrators, club administrators, they're just happy to have their own league up and running. They went through a lot of difficulties over the last couple of years. There was major fallouts among the clubs. They were really at each other's throats in terms of how to decide to end the 2019-2020 season. Relations were strained. Then they got last season restarted. The schedule was pretty crammed over the final months off the season, but they've been dealing with a lot of issues off their own, and I don't think they view now the time to make such a massive decision. You know, and there's reluctance anyway from the governing bodies, NIFL, the IFA, to engage in All-Ireland League. And there's always been that reluctance, certainly less of an appetite among clubs like Ballymena, Cliftonville, Coleraine, Glenavon, Carrick, Dungannon, all them teams, basically the part-time clubs. They believe it just wouldn't be feasible. But maybe some sort of a reformatted Setanta Cup style knockout competition again could be looked at. The summer football, that's an interesting one. I mean, it's been debated now for quite a few years. It hasn't really come to a head. I think there's more of a possibility because there are clubs that are very open towards it, about their desire to switch to summer football. Yes, there are some who don't want to see it. Others then want a kind of a halfway house whereby maybe it runs from May to January. And that's so that they don't lose the traditional Boxing Day derbies, which provide normal times their biggest gates of the season. But they know that if they want to progress in Europe and they want to be at their peak fitness and compete with the sides, it's a conversation that needs to happen. There's a new CEO has come in now, Jared Lawler, and maybe he might grab ownership of it. It's a tough call. Some want it, some don't. And if it's a split decision, I wouldn't want to try and predict what way it could go.
Yeah, as we mentioned, it kicks off this Friday. Larne versus Coleraine, Portadown versus Glenavon. Saturday, you've got Cliftonville versus Carrick Rangers, Dungannon Swiss versus Glentoran, Limfield versus Crusaders, that'd be a big one, and Warren Point versus Ballymena. But at this stage, Eric, Limfield will obviously be the ones that people are going to try and catch.
Well, Linfield will start as favourites, James, simply because they are Linfield. They've been the dominant force once again over the last couple of seasons. Last year, League and Cup double. Even though they only clinched the title in the penultimate game of the season, and indeed their nearest challengers, Coleraine, could have taken it to the final day had they beaten Linfield at home rather than it ending in a draw. But Linfield, I thought, always looked in control. They were always the team the rest of the pack were chasing, and that's not going to change. They have an outstanding manager, by the way, in David Healy. He's won the league now 4 out of his last 5 seasons that he's been in charge at Windsor Park. Last year was 3 in a row, and he's done a tremendous job, because at a club like Linfield, you're only ever 3 or 4 defeats away from fans calling for your head. They're very, very demanding, and their expectations are enormous. But Coleraine ran them close, coming second on a considerably lower budget, and they're a side that punch above their weight, and that's because they too have an outstanding manager in Oran Kearney, who went to Scotland, you'll recall, managed St Mirren for a season in the SPL, kept them up when they were in serious trouble. And then you're going to have the likes of Glentoran and Larne, who, as we've spoken about, have invested heavily to try and catch the Blues. And Linfield, because they've made the switch to full-time, they were part-time, even with all that success that they were having, they've actually had quite a number of departures over the summer. Andy Waterworth, Mark Stafford, they've gone to Glenavon. Shane Blaney's gone to Blackpool. Joel Cooper's gone to Oxford. So they've lost a few players going across the water. They've lost a few players because they're making the shift to full time. And maybe this is the season that other clubs feel that they can reel them in, but it won't be easy.
It won't be easy at all. And of course, as I said, the Danske Bank Premiership starts this Friday evening and continues into Saturday. But before we let you go, Eric, as what has been the voice of Northwest Derbies for many, many years, it'd be rude for me not to ask you about Friday night's cup game between Harps and Derry.
Well, it's a big one, isn't it? It's a really big one here. And, you know, I think the hype around it has heightened given the form of both teams going into it. I thought for Derry on Saturday night, it was a pretty significant win at Sligo. Four league wins in a row. What was a 13-point deficit cut to just 1 point now. And they see maybe third, fourth place as being attainable. And along with Shamrock Rovers, you'd have to say that with the transformation under Rory Higgins, they are one of the form teams, and they're now up against Finn Harps, who have been resurgent themselves over the last couple of weeks. I think when the draw was initially made, Derry probably were quite happy with it, but Harps, Ollie Horgan there, you can never write him off, can you? He's got a kick out of them again. They looked as if that they were really on a slide. Then they faced Fairview away in the cup, but went extra time. It was a banana skin, but they came through it. And they followed that up with three league wins, and they'll go into the tie too with massive confidence. So the mood really has been transformed. We've seen at Finn Park last Friday night, there was the return of fans, which I think helped them as well. They got their first win at home in over 4 months. That was against St. Patrick's Athletic. So I think they might be getting the 800 in on Friday night. Not sure if they're allowing any of their neighbours from across the border in or not. I'm not sure what the situation is there with away fans, but there'll be a raucous atmosphere. One win each for the away team in the two league fixtures. And Harps have never knocked Derry out of the FAI Cup, so this is a really close one to call. And who knows, could go to extra time, could go to penalties. But excellent. We're looking forward to it.
Excellent. Thanks very much for your time, Eric. And now we move on to the SSC Airtricity Women's National League. And results on Saturday, Galway Women's FC 6, Cork City Women's FC 1, Bohemians Bet3 United 5-1. The game between DLR Waves and Wexford was postponed due to a waterlogged pitch. And in the other game, Shelburne winners 4-0 over Athlone Town. And Noel King was speaking to our reporter, Jonathan Higgins, after that result.
So, Noel, firstly, dreadful weather conditions, but a good victory to get things back on track again.
Absolutely. You never bother the weather when you're winning. That's as true as God. But it was very difficult for the girls, particularly as the game wore on and the ground got waterlogged almost. But it's a great win. Keeps us back on top and ready for the future.
It was a good start in the game. You really, really, I thought, tore into them, really squeezed that loan back right from the off, really.
Yeah, I think that's correct. I think that was the intention, that to start bright and early, and I thought we continued it through the game. A number of substitutes came on and did very, very well to keep the momentum going. So all in all, you know, missing two penalties as well, which is, it's very unlike us, but it's a very good performance, yeah.
You know, you kept the momentum going. It was horrible weather conditions. It still is now, but there's a period there during the second half where, you know, I was almost thinking at one stage of the game might be pulled. It was, well, but you know, great character from your team.
Yeah, well, it was good. They have a good character within them. You know, they're very focused, very professional. They walk their socks off in the game, and are very talented as well, which is very, very good. But the weather, you have to play in all sorts of weather. They know that. It went through my head that it might be called up as well, which would have been a disaster for us. But it wasn't, thankfully, and we've gone on and got 3 points to keep us in contention.
And exactly as Noel mentioned there, keep them in contention indeed. That puts them level at the top with Piemont United, who are obviously away in European action this week. A loss on Wednesday morning was then followed up, but should have been their second game, but it was postponed due to a COVID outbreak in their opposition's camp, and they were locked down by the entire squad was locked down in the hotel, so that game couldn't go ahead. Well, that's your lot from the RTE Soccer Podcast this week. Until next week, goodbye.